From WBUR Boston, I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American beer, a $200 billion industry, is dominated by two companies, Anheuser-Busch InBev and Miller Coors. But in the last few decades, we've seen craft beers on the rise, from 8 craft breweries in 1980 to almost 2,500 today. From Allagash Brewing Company in Portland, Maine, to Ballast Point Brewing in San Diego, California. These new, smaller craft breweries draw on regional flavors. They're experimental, innovative, extreme, and they're tasty. This hour, On Point, a look and a taste of American craft beer. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation never ends. What's your favorite American craft beer? Have you made the switch from Bud and Miller and Coors to Dogfish Head's 90-Minute IPA and Russian River's Pliny the Elder? Why? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now in the studio is Andy Crouch. He's the author of the books The Great American Craft Beer, A Guide to the Nation's Finest Beers and Breweries, and The Good Beer Guide to New England. He's a columnist for Beer Advocate magazine. An all-around craft beer expert, Andy Crouch, welcome to On Point.
It's good to be here.
Andy, first let me ask you, on behalf of my old Duke fraternity brothers and frat boys everywhere, how'd you get that gig as beer columnist at the magazine?
Yeah, not too shabby. So what I started doing in college, you know, like many other individuals, I was getting into beer a little bit more, and then I went to and spent a summer in London. And at that point, I had my first Guinness in a pub down the street from my university. And I realized that all beer didn't have to taste sort of yellow and fizzy and relatively plain. So with that, I got on a plane and went on my first brewery tour at Guinness in Dublin. And from there, went back to college. A brew pub opened up in my local town. And then
town was that?
That was in Des Moines, Iowa. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I became a little bit more involved. And I was a journalist by training in college, and I started getting into freelance writing more and more.
Were you at Drake?
At Drake, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I became more and more interested in it, and it just seemed like a good topic. And craft beer has just exploded in the last 15 years, so the timing has worked out great.
Let's start with the basics for those Americans who may be lowbrow beer consumers or not even beer consumers. What is a craft beer?
That is actually a pretty politically charged question, and it seems like a ridiculous thing to say, but
Red state, blue state thing?
It is almost that divided in this country. There are individuals who are sort of hardcore in their belief about what craft beer is, and they believe along with the lines of what the definition of the industry group, the Brewers Association, says, which is that a brewery has to be small, which means under 6 million barrels of beer a year. It has to be independent, which means that less than 25% of that craft brewery is owned by, say, a bigger brewery. And then it's traditional. They generally have an all-malt flagship. For other people, and so that would exclude beers that a lot of people enjoy, such as Blue Moon because it's made by Coors, or Goose Island because it's now owned in outright by Anheuser-Busch InBev.
Who came up with those criteria anyway? The 6 million, the 25%?
Well, the 6 million is particularly malleable. It used to be 2 million until some of the larger craft breweries, such as Boston Beer, started to push up against that ceiling, and then suddenly it became 6 million. So there is a lot of malleability in those terms. So
is that Sam Adams?
Boston? That is Sam Adams, yes. And so there is you know, a lot of debate over what those terms should be. And frankly, there's a lot of breweries that produce beer with corn or rice or other adjuncts, small breweries that even do that, that aren't included in this craft beer mix. But really, I think that it comes down to you need to drink what you like, whether that is, you know, Miller High Life or, you know, some of these, you know, more flavorful craft beer products. I think that there is a room at the table for everybody.
Well, do you think because of some of this gaming that's gone on in terms of defining what's a craft beer according to the capacity of who's producing it, is it kind of a phony distinction?
I think it is. And I think for consumers, it is especially phony. And like a lot of politics that say go on within the beltway that people pay attention to and only in the beltway, I think for craft beer, people who drink better beer, or whether it be craft beer or some of the beers that sort of range up to that point, if they're drinking Blue Moon and they think, wow, this tastes a lot better than Coors Light or better than the Miller Lite that I'm used to drinking, I'm kind of interested in learning more about this. And then they drink Allagash White, and then they drink Hoegaarden, and then they start moving into Pilsner beer and then IPAs maybe. That's just a great development. And, you know, the phrase gateway beer is sometimes overused. But really, if that is an entryway into craft beer, I think that that just expands the opportunity for American craft brewers to have a broader share of mind.
Let me ask you, if in fact the craft beer industry has exploded in the last 15 years, why has that happened? Was it a legal change, a regulatory change, or a shift in American culture?
I think it really is the latter, the shift in the American culture. And we've seen this, you know, time and time again in American society and just how our palates are changing. And we don't just eat craft singles anymore and drink you know, flavored Kool-Aid. We are starting to care more about where our products come from. And that's – we see that in farmers markets, all over the United States. We're seeing it in restaurants. We're seeing it in declines in consumption of things like McDonald's and Burger King. And so people care more about the quality of their products. And for a very long time, up until, you know, 20 years ago or so, we weren't seeing a lot of diversity in the marketplace. And these larger breweries had a large stranglehold and had very little incentive to do anything other than come up with increasingly absurd forms of television advertising. But these small craft brewers who had maybe been to Europe or maybe were homebrewing, discovered flavorful English ales or German craft lagers and thought, why can't I have this at home? Started making those beers. People started getting a taste for them. And now we're starting to see, this roll just downhill in terms of just the speed that it's taking on.
So just as monopolies have fallen in all kinds of fields, including the news business, and people go to a million websites, the craft beer industry, like the internet, is proliferated.
That really is a good example. And what we see in a lot of industries in America is consolidation. So we have fewer and fewer players. And that's why, say, in the news business, the internet really has expanded that out. Same thing for craft beer. We're seeing a lot of consolidation at the top, but then smaller breweries are, now make up 98% of the breweries in this country.
I want to go to a caller. We've got David calling from Hilton Head, South Carolina. David, you're on point. What's your question for Andy?
Hi, John. I've really got a couple of comments. I'm one of these guys that's a pretty passionate beer fan who's been pretty amazed at just the proliferation and the variety of craft beers that I've seen come out, especially in this area in the past few years. We've really had some great local brewers down here, and I think the great thing that the variety of beers that, I can find now gives you is just the ability to kind of match beers to your own individual tastes or mood or even the time of year for the time being. Example that I use is I really got into wheat beers a few years ago. My introduction to that was with the Leinenkugel Sunset Wheat. It blew me away. And it really inspired me to explore some of the local breweries around here. We've got a great local variety that's brewed with real South Carolina peaches. It's actually called, and I'll use very specific language here, Son of a Peach, as in peaches. And it's just delicious. So I'm full bore into the craft beer section, and I'll sit back and listen to you guys comment on that. I'm just, again, a really passionate beer fan checking in here.
Andy, how typical is David?
Very typical these days. And what we're starting to see just through proliferations of websites such as Beer Advocate, which has millions of users every month, just people in these beer festivals and beer events in most towns of the U.S., you can find them weekly, if not daily. The Brewers Association has said that every person in America lives within, or the average person in America lives within 10 miles of a brewery. And we're seeing, as the caller noted, we're seeing a proliferation not just in the cities like Boston or New York or Denver or Chicago, but all throughout the country, especially in the South. And we're seeing a lot of new breweries open in that area. And that ranges from some of these small breweries that are called nano breweries that maybe only make essentially have a giant lobster pot set up to breweries that are making hundreds of thousands of barrels a year. So passionate beer fans are abound.
Andy, I think I'm going to be forced to do the first tasting. We've got a Notch Brewing Session Ale from Ipswich, Mass. I'm going to taste it, but I'm a little lowbrow in my palate, so I want you to tell me what I'm tasting.
Sure. So this is a Notch Brewing Session Ale. They, as I said, brew in Ipswich, Massachusetts. The concept here is session beer, which means lower alcohol beer that you can have a couple of during a drinking session, as opposed to some higher alcohol beers. And this is a pretty straightforward ale.
They're trying to encourage me to lengthen the session.
They are, and they're trying to make sure that you can have a few beers and then not lose your head by the end of the evening. And so they have beers. Notch has beers as low as 2.8% alcohol. This one is 4.5. So it's it has a nice sort of amber color to it.
Now, put 4.5 into perspective for me. What does a Budweiser have?
Budweiser, most of your mainstream beers you're going to find in the 4.5 to 5.5 percentile. So usually 5 to 5.5 is about where they're at. So when you start, and it may not seem like a lot, but if you have 2 or 3 pints, a 6.5% beer is going to have a much greater effect on somebody than, say, a 4.5 or let alone a 4% beer. This America really has no history of sessioning beer or really sessioning alcohol, as opposed to, say, Britain, which has a long history of that. So there is this movement in the country now sort of in response to the age of extreme beer, which we just sort of got out of, which is a lot of high alcohol, high hopped beers, to go in the opposite direction, seeing beers that are 3%, 4%, and under 5%.
Is that dangerous, by the way, for young people who don't know how to calibrate the amount of alcohol in their beers?
I don't know that it's dangerous in the sense that these beers, craft beers, usually are at a higher price point to begin with. So I don't think that we see a lot of problems with people slamming these beers or really the frat party sort of atmosphere.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about American craft beer with Andy Crouch, author of the book Great American Craft Beer and columnist for Beer Advocate magazine. And joining me from Chicago, Illinois, is Barnaby Struva. He's the vice president of Three Floyds Brewing, a craft brewery in Munster, Indiana. Three Floyds Brewing was a 2013 James Beard Foundation semifinalist in the Outstanding Wine, Spirit, and Beer Professional category. Barnaby Struva, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
And joining me from Bend, Oregon, is Tanya Cornett, research and development brewmaster at 10 Barrel Brewing in Bend, Oregon. In 2008, she was the first and only woman to win the Brewmaster Award at the annual World Beer Cup competition. Tanya, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Before I go to Barnaby and Tanya, I want to ask you one other question, Andy, and it comes to mind because of the previous caller who was from Hilton Head. Is craft beer an upper middle class, a 1%, an affectation of the 1% because of the price point and not something that your working class consumer is into?
I think that there's long been that impression, and I think more and more that is changing. The price point of beer, as I said previously, might be a little bit much for, say, somebody who's 21 years old, but frankly, it still remains a very affordable luxury. So as opposed to wine, which can get into $25, $30, $100 more dollars a bottle, you can have some of the best beer in the world for under $5. So it still is just a very reasonable price point for most consumers, and I think that we're starting to see that broaden as the older generation of, I have brand loyalty to Budweiser or Bud Light or Coors is starting to age out of the system. We're starting to see people drink less but drink better.
Barnaby, who is the target audience for Three Floyds?
Basically anybody who can get their little grubby little hands on it. Beer is an accessible product. It is a working class beverage, even though the craft beer seems to, have affectations of being much more highfalutin. Still, we want everybody from, guys working the road crew to, female doctors or anybody to drink it because we just really are passionate about what craft beer is and what it should be. People should be able to enjoy better products.
Barnaby, do you find that your consumers are more men than women?
That is also changing along with the whole conception of craft beer as it grows. It used to be, back when I first started brewing in the early 90s, it was nothing but portly gentlemen But now it's actually you'll go to beer fests or even in our pub, you'll see, you know, women coming over to the beer side because there are so many more flavors and different products, and you know, it's accessible to everybody, and that's what we're trying to do as craft brewers.
Tanya, how do you think of the person that you're developing these flavors for? Is it a high-income demographic, or what's in your mind's eye when you're trying to figure out what to put in your next beer?
Well, really, I just brew what I like, and hopefully other people will like it too.
And what do you like?
Well, that's across the board. You know, some days I'm feeling like brewing a super hoppy beer. Oregon is known for its great hoppy beers, and Barnaby would be able to attest. He was one of the first ones to really bring hoppy beers to the market and have great success with it. And,
what does that mean, hoppy beer?
So extremely bitter, and it's kind of enjoying a bitter taste that I think we probably aren't programmed to necessarily in our bodies like. But it's actually very enjoyable, and it goes with, you know, like greasy foods really well.
You've reprogrammed your body?
Yes, I think I have. And, you know, other types of beer that I've been working with are sours, and that's also, I think, a flavor that we probably are not programmed to like. And they just go with food so well, and they definitely, I think they have brought the standards up to wine levels.
Let's take a call from David, who's from Farmington, Connecticut. David, you're on point.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm doing great. What's your comment or question?
I had to get into this conversation because I heard somebody say Dogfish IPA at the beginning, and that's just a fantastic beer. And I think it's interesting because I grew up in Wisconsin and then made my way to the East Coast, and sort of Milwaukee is known for not having necessarily the greatest in terms of craft beers. Yet, you know, as I get older and as I start to experience and drink, you know, better beers, what you see is I'm still trying to figure out why it is people are still purchasing the Miller Lights, the Bud Lights, the Coors Lights, and so forth, because for the most part, my experience was drinking it. You drink it because it was cheap, or you drink it because you're on a diet. But nobody was really drinking it for the flavor. And in the commercials and the advertising that you see about it, it sort of presents, and Coors Light commercials are especially, I think, like this. They present an image of who's drinking it. And when you look at sort of a snapshot of those people in those bars, they're never drinking it.
We've got a little audio problem with David. But, Andy, what about that? Have light beers been undersold as something simply for people trying to lose weight?
I think that light beer in the United States, especially in the last 5 years, has seen what I don't think anybody could have really foreseen in the industry, which is that we've seen a precipitous drop in the consumption of Bud Light and Miller Light and a lot of these products. And it's been kind of amazing. And that has gone along with the fact that people are drinking craft beer a little bit more. Also, you know, to talk about the caller's question a little bit. You know, people drink beers like Miller High Life and Budweiser because they're familiar. They've drank them for a long time. They have brand loyalty. Now, as those people start to drink other beers, and they may be beers, you know, like some of the ones we have today, like Oscar Blues Pilsner, you know, some beers that are a little bit more accessible and straightforward, they may say, wow, this is opening my eyes to kind of a new world out there, a little bit more flavor. And then they start – the curiosity seeps in, and they start to move along the lines of finding out a beer like Gumball Head, which is brewed by Three Floyds, which is a fantastic, very accessible but really surprisingly complex beer. We're seeing, you know, people move down those lines after years of being, you know, with their familiar brands.
Barnaby, what's Gumball Head?
It's we call it an American wheat beer, which was a style that was pioneered by Widmer up in the Pacific Northwest. But what we took an entirely different tack with it. Instead of having a lot of yeast and still in solution, we clarified the beer, let it age naturally until it is actually clear, so you don't get a lot of the chalky sort of flavors from the yeast. And then we have very low bitterness, but a very, very high aromatic hop content. So you have
Why is it called Gumball?
Well, it's named after a cat named Gumball Head. And he's a really, really mean cat. He likes smoking cigarettes. He's 4'2". He was at the initial there's a punk rock record label called Skin Graft Records, and Gumball Head was very prominent in all their records.
All right, let's go to another caller. Gary from Lexington, Kentucky is on the line. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Go right ahead.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make a general comment. We actually run a premier commercial testing lab for alcoholic beverages here in the United States. And I wanted to just make a general comment that it's a phenomenal what we've seen with the growth of the craft beer industry, and there is some very, very good quality beer out there, as some of your other speakers have alluded to here. It's actually a fairly poorly regulated industry. There's not a great deal of regulation in terms of the general quality, so it is surprising how much good beer is being produced. A lot of the brewers out there started out as home brewers and kind of built up from there. Anyone can actually start a brewery right now with very limited credentials. And I think what is important as the industry perhaps begins to see some saturation, we need some consistency, quality of consistency, and some analytics that the big brewers can handle but the smaller brewers often cannot. It's really important, I think, that brewers should be members of the Brewers Association to understand some of the tax and trade bureau regulations out there. And they can also win some good accolades by entering the Great American Beer Festival competitions and the World Beer Cup, which will, you know, really enhance their reputation and show that they're dealing with quality productions.
Gary,
but I think it's also important to educate the public as to alcohol content, as some of your other speakers have alluded to there. But I think we are seeing beer the way it was supposed to be, without preservatives and full of flavor. I think it's a great industry to be involved in. And the next movement is actually going to be craft distilling. So we're seeing the nucleus of beer here now, and it will move forward with other beverages in the future.
Gary, thanks so much for your call. Tanya, what about the issue of regulation? Is the amount of regulation adequate to protect the public? Is it too much? What's your view?
Well, from my standpoint, beer is pretty fragile, and there's no human pathogens that can live in beer. So I feel like it somewhat regulates itself.
So we don't have to worry about safety issues from consumption, although the caller just raised the issue about alcohol content.
Right. I do think it's important to put alcohol content, because there are certain beers that drink like they're lower alcohol than they are, and especially if they're highly hopped beers, that bitterness tends to mask the kind of your...
How loaded you're getting,
yes,
while you're drinking.
Exactly,
it.
Your perception of alcohol that you are definitely intaking.
All right, I'm going to do tasting number two, and again, rely on Andy to describe what I'm drinking. This is Oscar Blues Mama's Little Yellow Pills from Longmont, Colorado.
So Oscar Blues is a pretty interesting brewery. They have opened in 1998, making a tiny amount of beer, slow growth to start, and then I chose this beer because it is a beer that is in the can, is served in the can, and Oscar Blues has really been at the forefront of that. So they grew at 52% growth last year. They're going to be almost 150,000 barrels this year. And when you start seeing that kind of number, it's amazing. This Pils is pretty straightforward, has a nice malt base to it, sort of a little sweeter malt base. And then the balance comes in with the hops. And as Tanya was saying earlier, hoppiness can mean a lot of things, and hops can mean a lot of things. They can talk about the bitterness that you perceive. They can be the aromatics, as we're going to find out with some of the other beers we have here. There can also be hop flavor, depending on how the brewers use them in the process. So this one is, you know, pretty easy drinking. You can drink it right from the can if you want. We're drinking it in glass today, but however you want to do it, it's just a very accessible, you know, flavorful beer.
All right, let's try another one. This is the Dogfish Head Festina Pesh from Milton, Delaware.
And before you drink, John, I do have to give you a little warning with this one. As Tanya noted, sour beer is a really big thing in craft beer now. This is called a sort of neo Berliner Weiss, which was a style from Berlin that is sort of stagnating. It is going to be a little tart, a little sour. That's from a lactic acid addition during fermentation. So just with that warning. So you can feel you can feel that around like the edge of your jaw a little
Absolutely.
Bit, and it's also low alcohol, 4.5%. It has sort of the quintessential summer beer.
Does that make it a session beer also?
It would be a session beer. It's a, you know, it has peach characteristics to it. It just, when it's hot outside, this is just that quintessential summer, sort of quenching beer that I think that you could probably drink a lot of after that first shock of sip.
Barnaby, let me ask you a snobbery question. Are you here to say that your beer and the beer of craft makers like you is simply superior to that the big boys make?
Technically speaking, none of us can compete with the big boys. They have the industry and the revenue to make dead-on, chemically perfect beer all over the world with different water sources and all that. That being said, part of what handcrafted beer is about and artisanal beer is that it is people like Tanya and myself that are actually making it, and there will be some variation, but we as brewers try to make it as consistent as possible. So technically speaking, I don't think craft beer is on par with the big guys, but I mean, it's just like, would you rather eat at Applebee's or the local mom and pop place? It's a whole different flavor issue.
Tanya, do you wish that you could make chemically perfect beer? And what is chemically perfect beer?
Well, I would say a beer that is chemically perfect, I think that would be like super consistent. Every single batch is exactly the same. And I do have to say, across the board, the pilsners that the large companies make or the lagers that they make, they're beautiful. They're very difficult to make. There's no flavors to hide behind. Any defects show. And you would know it as a consumer if one was different, one batch is different from the next.
So if you drink a Budweiser, that doesn't feel like swill in your mouth.
In my mouth?
Yes.
I typically don't gravitate toward large domestic beers because I just like more flavor. And I think that's part of my job and what I do is to be able to create exciting flavors.
Let's take another call. We've got Jenny on the line from Birmingham, Alabama. Jenny, you're on a point.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. Go right ahead.
All right. I was calling for Barnaby, actually. My husband got me into craft beers about 7 years ago when I met him, and he's a big home brewer. And recently, I would say in about the last month, we have heard a lot about your beer, Zombie Dust, and have been trying to get our hands on it, but it seems to only be available up north. We were in D.C. actually last week and looked for it all over the place. But do you have any plans on expanding having your beers available throughout the country?
Barnaby, why is Zombie Dust not in Birmingham?
Well, we're still relatively small by microbrewing standards, and we always want to be a small craft beer. I mean, that being said, we grew by over 30% last year, and our production always increases, but our brand and the desire for our brand exceeds what we can do in terms of actually physically putting in more tanks and brewing more of it. With Zombie Dust, it's somewhat of a phenomenon. People just really, really gravitate towards it. But
what's
right now,
distinctive about Zombie Dust?
It's a pale ale. So it has what we try to do is we try to make very, very bright, hoppy, flavorful beers, but that are not getting kicked in the drawers. We want something that people can drink more than one of. It doesn't have to be the most extreme thing. It's all about using traditional technical brewing techniques to try to actualize flavors that we want. So we want, again, a very bright beer that has a little bit of a malt backbone to it and that people can have more than one of.
How many brands of beer do you make?
We make last year we made over 43. We make 7 year-round with 12 seasonals, one every month, and then all kinds of other weird stuff that we just punctuate the year with.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about American craft beer with Andy Crouch, author of the book Great American Craft Beer and columnist for Beer Advocate magazine. Barnaby Struva, vice president of the craft brewery Three Floyds Brewing in Indiana. And Tanya Cornett, brewmaster at craft brewery 10 Barrel Brewing in Bend, Oregon. I want to play a clip of an advertisement from a craft brewing that goes after the big boys that we've talked about and get Barnaby to respond on the other side.
The big boys brag their beer is triple hopped. Our handcrafted Lucky You IPA is triple hopped. Twice. Plus one.
Seven druple hopped.
Truth in Beer Advertising from your friends at Breckenridge Brewery.
Seven truple, Barney. Barnaby, what do you think of that?
Sure. Good for them. No, it's what you see a lot of, even with the big guys, like even Sapporo, they say it's ceramic cold filtered, but all beer has to be cold to be filtered, and pump seals are ceramic. So there's a lot of this sort of jargon going around, and it leads to the point that we touched on earlier, that we not only want to make better beer, we want to make better beer drinkers, more informed beer drinkers. So people can actually wade through the the nonsense of advertising and actually learn about what we do and how the beer is crafted and what flavors they like. And you know, Tanya, I'm sure, is the same way. We make the beers we like, but we also make a wide variety of beers because taste is subjective, and we want people to be able to recognize the flavors they like in beer, get used to some of the jargon about it, and just become more informed. Because once you have the taste for it, you cannot go back. I mean, you're just like no one wants to eat Nighthawk TV dinners anymore. You know, it's people actually are into local food and locally crafted beers because they're superior products.
Tanya,
but that being said, it's just because you make beer doesn't mean you make good beer, and we need more better beer, not just more beer.
Do you think more regulation is necessary, like the caller previously indicated?
I don't think regulation is necessarily the key. I mean, obviously, it's highly regulated because it is an alcoholic beverage. But the previous caller had a lot of good points, and that is, you know, breweries should try to go for further education in terms of, you know, their technical ability. They should also be involved in the community and just learn how to make better beer because, as he said, you know, if you've nothing against homebrewers, I mean, they support us, and I think they're huge advocates for our craft. But that being said, just because you've made a few batches and you get a loan, maybe you shouldn't necessarily be making beer.
Tanya, do the big boys play fair with craft brewers in terms of the ways in which they dominate shelf space in stores, in the laws that are passed that let you or don't let you ship beer across state lines so that the woman in Birmingham isn't able to get her zombie dust? How is that kind of competition going between large and small?
Well, you know, we all fight for shelf space, especially in supermarkets, and it is very difficult, and they do have a stronghold in that market. That being said, I think that consumers will be the ones to dictate who gets that shelf space ultimately, because they will buy our products, and they will see the supermarket chains will see what products are going.
All right, let's take a call. We've got Noel calling from Norfolk, Virginia. Noel, you're on the line.
Hi, it's Noelle, actually. How are you all?
We're doing great. Go right ahead.
Thanks. I work at a brewery that just opened in November of 2012 in Norfolk, Virginia, Smart Mouth Brewing. And I kind of think we're on the front lines and educating beer drinkers. I manage the tasting room there, and I give tours. And it's just been a really great experience to see craft beer explode in my region. 3.5 years ago, we had no craft breweries. Now we're up to 5 and growing. People are starting tour companies with tour buses to give tours to all the local craft breweries. And it's just a great time to be in the beer business.
Barnaby, is it a great time?
It is. It is actually wonderful. I love the fact that so many breweries are opening up. You know, as I said, I mean, I hope they all make great beer, and I wish them the best. I mean, here in Chicago, we've had an explosion of little breweries popping up everywhere, and it just gives the consumer more choices. It's really nice. I mean, and also in Indiana, where our brewery is, you know, we have over 80 now, where we didn't have any, you know, 15 years ago.
Andy, I read a survey the other day which indicated that beer consumption as a proportion of alcohol consumption is declining, even among young people who had previously been a foundational element of the beer business. What is the long-term trajectory of beer? Is craft beer growing within a shrinking beer industry?
It's a very interesting question. It's one that we, you know, are looking at pretty closely. What we're seeing is people, like I said earlier, are drinking less but drinking better, and that's sort of across the board. And we're seeing people getting into craft cocktails, and wine consumption is growing. But really, the overall numbers for the production of and the consumption of larger brewery beer, you know, the Budweiser's and the Bud Light, is dropping, you know, a couple percentage points a year. So that does make the entire market shrink a little bit, and it looks a little bit smaller. But really, craft beer has been exploding over the last, you know, decade, frankly. And even during the economic downturn in 2007, 2008, and 2009, craft beer is still growing at 10 to 15% a year. And so now we're seeing craft beer as 6.5% of the market. Next year, it'll probably be 7.5%. And even more important, we're seeing dollar share.
What do you expect it to be 10 years from now?
That's, you know, there was Kim Jordan, who was the president of New Belgium Brewery, in New Orleans at a craft brewers conference a decade or more ago, said that she expected within a few years the craft brewer industry to get to 10% market share. And everyone thought that that was crazy. And now it's taken a while, but within 5 years or so, we could see, you know, within 3 years, we could see 10% market share. And even better is, or the even more important thing is, the share of dollars being spent. You know, it's great if you can sell a lot of volume of beer, but if you can take, you know, 10, 15, 20% of the market in sales, that is literally where the money is, and that's what craft beer is doing.
All right. We are fortunate enough to have on the line the only woman who has ever won the Brewmaster Award at the annual World Beer Cup Conversation. I think it's time we taste her beer. Tanya, I'm about to have a taste. I will ask Andy as well, since he's the critic, but maybe you want to tell me what I'm drinking?
This is the Apocalypse IPA, Tanya.
Okay. So, again, it's very hot forward, so very bitter, and it comes in at just under 7%. So it's definitely a beer that you would drink a couple of and possibly switch to something lighter.
And have a designated driver.
Yes. Or drink at home.
Now, is this the beer, Tanya, for which you won the award?
This is not. I was with a different brewery when I won that. So all the recipes stayed with that brewery.
And how many different brands are you involved in making right now?
We have four core brands, but again, I do research and development, so I do a different beer all the time, hundreds of beers a year.
And your company, Andy was describing before, the I believe 6 million barrels is the threshold for being described as a craft beer. Where are you on that scale?
This year, we're headed towards 22,000 barrels.
Oh, so you're very comfortably under it. How about you, Barnaby?
Oh, we did 27,000 last year, and hopefully we're on track to do 35 this year. But we have no intention of getting over 100,000 barrels.
Do you think, Barnaby, that the definition has been gamed to help larger companies, the people who make Sam Adams, enjoy the prestige of that name?
Well, I think the Brewers Association – there has to be some sort of definition and boundaries, and it does fluctuate periodically. But the Brewers Association is an advocate for most of the smaller craft beers, not the big guys. So they're definitely not trying to help them out. And also, you know, part of educating people is this is what a giant brewery does, and let's put it in perspective so that, you know, say like Three Floyds, yeah. Instead of doing, you know, 1 million barrels a year or 6 million barrels a year, we did 27,000, and that's all part of educating the public about what, you know, where we stand. Because a lot of things like our brand, you know, like the lady down in Birmingham mentioned, we have a good brand, and people just generally think that beer comes out of a magic machine, and so it's up to us to educate people, show them the brewery, show them the faces that are actually associated with it, and give them some sort of perspective.
Barnaby, why can't the woman in Birmingham go to your website, order a case of zombie dust, and get it sent to her?
Because that's incredibly illegal. She might be 12. I don't know.
And is that something that you think is appropriately illegal? Is that not – brewers don't chafe at those sorts of regulations?
It would depend on the brewery. Right now, we can't even fill demand in our own market, so we would never want to open up mail order to anyone or open up new markets because we can't support them. What we want to do is in the Chicago and Indiana region, we just want to make sure that people here that have been supporting us since 1996 can get our products.
Andy, I want to ask you a question that was posed by one of our listeners on Facebook. When talking about what class drinks what, I would like to know if the 80-20 rule still holds. Is that axiomatic or just an old brewer's wives' tale? First of all, what was the 80-20 rule and does it hold?
Actually, I can't say I'm familiar with what the 80-20 rule is here. I would say in terms of what we're seeing in terms of people who are drinking, people are drinking less, people drinking better, but particularly in terms of consumption, we have a wide range of people in the craft beer industry who are drinking. As both Tanya and Barnaby have talked about, we're seeing new faces all the time at events. New faces that perhaps before used to be, as Barnaby said, you know, portly guys with long beards and just sort of a really passionate focus on craft beer. We're now seeing a lot of people get into this, and frankly, even you know some of the older people. My parents are interested in trying craft beers over holidays. We have. You know, and their friends are starting to get more and more interested in it. And as I think Tanya said, one of the callers said, we're starting to see people, you know, plan vacations around these things, plan tours, you know, going to different towns, trying new breweries, and we're seeing a lot of new faces under the big tent of craft beer.
Andy, our producers just informed me the 80-20 rule is that 20% of the beer drinkers drink 80% of the beer.
Gotcha. Yeah, I now that you mention it, I've heard that. It's really, you know, those sort of rules in terms of craft beer don't really apply. You know, we have a lot of small, you know, brewers now, and we have a lot of beer, you know, what are called beer geeks who perhaps make 80% of the noise but only drink 20% of the beer. Maybe that's a new 80-20 rule that we have these days.
All right, let's go to another caller, John from Rochester, New York. John, you're on Point. Go right ahead.
How are you?
Doing great.
Good. Hey, yeah, what advice, if any, could you give to a home brewer that would like to go to the next level, like nano or craft, you know, a brewery?
Tanya?
My suggestion would be to get your foot in the door at a brewery, even if it's washing kegs, and then you can see if it's really for you, because it's a lot of really hard work. And unless you're really into that, a lot of people get into the brewery and find that it's not for them.
Barnaby, any advice?
I would agree entirely with Tanya. It's one thing to enjoy craft beer, and it's another thing to, you know, be in the garage home brewing, and it's another thing to work in a brewery. I mean, a lot of people always say, oh, wow, you've got to have the best job in the world, and it is the best job in the world for me. However, it is a job, and we work in industrial facilities, and it's a factory, and we produce a food product, and it's not – you know, it's not like we just sit around and drink beer all day. I think that's a really common misconception of what we do.
Do people in your industry, Barnaby, work on narrow profit margins?
Yes, absolutely. I think that, you know, you have a much higher profit margin if you have a pub because you're obviously you can market up more. But because we are limited by the three-tier system, the only way as a factory to produce beer and sell kegs out the door is to – you can only make profit through volume. And so it's you basically don't make money for years and years and years until you hit a certain point, and then you can actually start investing in equipment and infrastructure and start growing the business a little bit more.
Let's get one more call. We've got Rob from Pikeville, Kentucky. Rob, you're on Point. Go right ahead.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing great.
I'm a soldier who recently came back from Europe about a year ago. I spent 3 years in Europe, and I got hooked on what I call the better beers, a lot of the German beers and all that stuff. My comment is when I was getting ready to come back to the States, I was worried I wasn't going to be able to find good beer anymore. You know, I thought I'd be stuck with the Budweisers and Bud Lights and Millers and stuff, and I was actually really relieved to find, you know, a very wide selection of better beer, you know, the craft beer. You know, I love Sam Adams seasonals that they send out all the time. And, you know, I go to the grocery store and, I'm looking for the next beer I want to try. And I'm actually happy, I'm more of a quality over quantity now.
That is great news, Rob. Tanya, are you doing your patriotic duty and taking care of returning soldiers?
Definitely. I brew for everyone.
I've got one more tasting I want to try. And Andy, again, this is number four, Ballast Point Brewing Sculpin IPA from San Diego. Looks like it has a little bit of the higher alcohol content. Tell me what I'm drinking.
Yeah, so this beer is out of San Diego. It's about 70 what are called international bitterness or bittering units. So it's relatively highly hopped. You have sort of apricot and peach, mango sort of notes to it. But also one thing I would – and it's sort of similar, maybe a little bit higher hop than Tanya's beer. But one of the things before we end here, I would like to have you just try the last beer that we have here, which is the Goose Island Bourbon County Stout. And this is going to be a completely different beer. So you're going to have the aromas of
wow.
And so this is a bourbon barrel aged beer, higher alcohol content, big vanilla, big wood notes, and this is sort of expressive of what
is there bourbon in it?
There's not bourbon in it. It's just but it's aged for some period of time, and it's just sort of an amazing demonstration of what craft beer can be in America.
That's fantastic. I want to thank Andy Crouch, author of the book Great American Craft Beer, columnist for Beer Advocate magazine, Barnaby Struva, vice president of the craft brewery Three Floyds Brewing in Indiana, and Tanya Cornett, a brewmaster at 10 Barrel Brewing in Bend, Oregon. This has been a fantastic show. I've learned a lot as somebody who has been satisfied with the big brewers. You're certainly opening my eyes to what else is possible. Coming up tomorrow, NFL preseason kicks off. We'll talk football with two women who know more about the game than most men. I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.